Hey, what's up, Blazer fans? Welcome to We Have a Take the What podcast. I am Tara Bowen Biggs. No co-host today, but we do have an awesome guest who I'm really excited to talk to today. He is Sean Hyken, the owner and author of The Rose Garden Report. He's been around reporting on other NBA teams, on the NBA at large, and of course on our beloved Blazers. So Sean, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tara. It's been literally since like a whole, there's been a whole pandemic since the last time you and I did any of this kind of stuff together. So looking forward to it.
I know it's really weird to think about that. I was thinking about on my way to my husband and I went to the game last night and we didn't ride our bikes. And we always for years and years, we always rode our bikes to the pandemic. And I was like feeling really bad rode our bikes to the Blazer game. And I was feeling really bad because I hadn't ridden my bike. And then I realized that like, really, that was our groove before the pandemic. And then I was just like shocked by how long it had been.
It's been so long because I remember this because the last time you and I recorded one of these together was when you were still doing the Blazers Edge podcast with Danny. And you guys had me on right after they signed Carmelo Anthony.
Oh my gosh, a lifetime ago.
That was what, like November of 2019? So
oh, yeah,
before COVID was even a thing that anybody was, I don't even know. I mean, maybe it had been discovered in China by that point, but it was not anything that was on anybody else's radar. And I just remember that podcast because obviously Danny felt a certain way about it that was different than maybe how other people felt about it. And so we had a really good recording and then something happened with the audio and we had to re-record it and Danny wasn't there at the time. So it was just me and you, but God, that was so long ago. I think this was like coming off of him winning Player of the Week.
Yeah.
Which was like a whole thing.
I'm really fascinated by that whole little short time period right before the pandemic started. Uh-huh. And just because like, so many memories of like the last thing that you did, the last time you did this, you know, and I don't know. It's just, it's really interesting.
So I have two. Or I have a few. I like a week before COVID, I'm sure you've probably had on like people associated with Flagrant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But they had their first issue launch party at, I forget the name, I might've been Deadstock, but somewhere downtown. And I went to that and it was like a lot of people from Twitter and just like a lot of people kind of in the same circles that you and I both run in. And that was on March 5th, 2020. And even by that point, like, I think we kind of halfway knew that like we probably shouldn't be going to stuff like this because this thing was going around and like, but it was still this like they hadn't really started shutting stuff down yet. So it was like we were all there, but we all kind of felt weird about it. And then the 2 days leading up to everything getting shut down, on March 10th, the Blazers played a game against Phoenix. And earlier that day, the Warriors sent out a thing saying they were going to start playing games without fans. And so I sent an email to my editors saying, hey, you know, I will cover these. The Blazers had a bunch of home games coming up. And in fact, the game that coming, I think Saturday or Sunday, was it like what, March 15th, was the day that Nurkic was supposed to play for the first time since he had the leg injury in the 2019 season. And I was telling my editors, and because we didn't know at that point that the season was going to be shut down. And so I was telling my editors that, you know, I will cover these games, but it's going to be kind of weird without fans. And so I was preparing to like go cover games without fans. And that was just going to be really weird. And then we get an email from the Pro Basketball Writers Association, which is a group that I'm a member of that kind of negotiates with the league about access and that all that kind of stuff, saying that due to the, you know, out of an abundance of caution, they were going to stop letting us be in locker rooms, but that they were confident that in a couple of weeks or a couple of months, once this coronavirus thing subsided, that we, you know, that all that was going to be restored. And so they played Phoenix on the 10th. And I went there and it was just really weird. And obviously this is kind of a precursor to the mixed messaging that we've gotten about this since then, because we were not allowed to go within 6 feet of anybody. We couldn't be in the locker rooms. We had to be totally socially distanced, but there was, you know, plenty of people in the audience that were, you know, no masks anywhere, no social distancing anywhere. And that was the last game that it covered. And then the next night, and I probably in retrospect shouldn't have done this, but Chris Burkhardt, who I'm sure you know,
Trailcasters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he was at NBC Sports Northwest at the time, back when that station still existed. He and I went to see Tool at the Moda Center on the night of the 11th. And we had the NBC Sports suite, which he got us. And we went. And again, at that point, we were both like, probably like, should we be doing this? I don't know. But we've got these tickets. We might as well go. We don't know if it's going to get canceled. And then during the show, like I think 10 minutes into the show, we get the news alert that the governor said, first of all, we get the alert that Rudy Gobert tested positive and the NBA season was getting shut down. And then we get the news alert like half an hour later that the governor said no more gatherings outside of 50 people. And we're just like, well, we probably aren't going to be doing this again for a while.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So, okay. I have two like accompanying stories to those. Yes, okay. I did talk to somebody with Flagrant like right before they launched their first Ashton.
Yeah.
And I think I had both Ashton and Alex on. And so, you know, we were talking about that. So there's that thing. But I was actually in Phoenix for the game that the Blazers played that first weekend of March. And so we went to that game. And while we were waiting for that game to start in Phoenix, it was kind of that like, ooh, I think things are going to be starting to shut down. So let's just get this thing done and then go home and stay home. So while we were in Phoenix, we got the alert that said that Yusuf Nurkic was going to be coming back that
on the 15th,
the game against Houston, I think. And so
yeah, it was Houston.
Like we immediately like went online and bought our Nurk jerseys and we were like so stoked. We like couldn't
bought
wait
tickets to... for that game. Or
yeah.
You already
well,
had.
We already had tickets to the game, but like wanted to get like all new merchandise, you know, so we could like go and welcome him back. And that was one of the weirdly hard things for the pandemic for me was not being able to like cope with the fact that like we were never able to welcome Nurkic back, right?
It right, because he played in the bubble, but obviously none of us were at the bubble.
Yeah,
I wanted to go. I told my editors I would go, but it, you know, they didn't want to spend the money. So
yeah,
but
yeah, that was a big thing. Well, and because like I was there the night he broke his leg, and so for me, I felt like I really needed to be there the night he came back, so I could be there in the audience. So that was a bummer. And then the other thing that I remember was on that the night of the 11th, when Rudy Gobert tested positive.
Uh-huh.
I was recording an episode of the podcast with Sharon Brown, who covers the Grizzlies. Yeah. And we were like in the middle of it and we were just like, what's going on? And she and I had recorded something else before. And for some reason it hadn't worked. And so we were like re-recording a preview of this game. And so like that never came out because they never actually played the game between Portland and Memphis that we were trying to preview.
Right. It was right. Memphis was the one the next day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
On the 12th. Yeah, and that one.
It's just really weird how like so much of the pandemic is like twisted up in my brain with like Blazer and basketball stuff. Cause it was like when the NBA shut down, that was when it was suddenly like, oh, this is real.
Well, you want to hear something, a couple of crazy things about that. And I know we're getting kind of totally off on this rabbit hole of like,
you just didn't want to answer my icebreaker, but that's fine.
Beginnings of the pandemic. But so two things. One, on January 27th of 2020, the day after Kobe Bryant died, the front page of the LA Times was like 90% taken up by coverage of Kobe, obviously. And then at the very bottom of the front page, the headline, first confirmed case of coronavirus discovered in the United States. And then about a month later was the first time I really like heard about it in a major way, because in retrospect, this was probably an event that I shouldn't have gone to, but I was in Chicago in February for the All-Star game. And I was out at dinner with a friend who pays attention to this kind of stuff in the news a lot more than I do at that point. And he was saying, hey, have you heard about this coronavirus? And I was like, well, I mean, I've kind of vaguely heard about this thing going around in China, but I don't really know that much about it. And he was like, you may want to like start getting prepared because this is going to get really bad. And that's the first time I really heard about it in any kind of real way. And that was like a month before, like, I'm sure it was all over the place by that point. I'm sure like people were getting it. I don't know how this is possible, but I somehow to this day have never had COVID that I know of.
Yeah, I have.
I'm like one of the only people that I know that hasn't had it. And I mean, you know, obviously I got all my vaccines and boosters and all that stuff. And I still will wear a mask to like the grocery store and on an airplane or on public transit. But most places I go, I'm not like militantly wearing one. I'm out there. I'm going to covering Blazer games all the time. I I don't know how I haven't gotten it. I somehow haven't. I would like to keep not getting it, but I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, me too. And I will continue to wear my mask through the illness season because also it's really nice not getting sick. Like,
oh yeah, no, I got my flu shot. I haven't been sick at all since then because, you know, you wear masks everywhere and it's...
Yeah, turns out when you're careful about stuff like that, it often works.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so, but I would love to kind of roll it back a little bit and learn a little bit more about you and sort of like your basketball origin story. How did you get so into basketball to a place where it led it to for you to have it as a career?
I grew up here in Portland. Obviously was a huge Blazer fan growing up because my dad would take me to games. And this was during the late 90s, early 2000s when it was like the Damon Stoudemire, Rasheed Wallace, Arvydas Sabonis, Brian Grant, Stacey Augmon, Scottie Pippen was on one of those teams, like that whole era. And I got really into it then. And I kind of fell out of it in the mid 2000s, kind of like a lot of people did for, you know, different reasons that a lot of those I think have been pretty well documented. But I got back into it in high school and early college when like the Brandon Roy, LaMarcus Aldridge stuff started, when those teams kind of started. And I was always like, I was on the school newspaper in high school and I always, I was always like, was a good writer. That was like my best subject. And so that was always kind of something I wanted to do. And it just kind of made sense to, I guess, you know, combine those two things. And then when I was in college was when a lot of the NBA like Twitter and blog scene kind of started exploding in that way where like I caught on at one point with the True Hoop Network and Hardwood Paroxysm, which Matt Moore ran, and was actually, if you think about it, like there's a lot of people who are still covering the NBA at a high level that came from that, I guess, pipeline, whether, you know, Sirit Sohi from The Ringer was an HP person, James Herbert from CBS. There are others. I mean, I think a couple of the Basketball Jones / Starters / No Dunks guys, they all kind of came from like the Matt Moore HP basketball tree. And so I was one of those folks also. And this was back in like the early 2010s when it was possible to get a job covering the NBA full time off of just doing that kind of stuff and being a presence on Twitter, maybe a way that it's not now just because of the way that the industry has gone. And so I got really lucky. And right when I was out of college, I got hired by USA Today to be their NBA writer for their site For the Win that they were launching at that point, which is kind of like they were basically trying to do BuzzFeed. Again, this was like 2012, 2013, somewhere around there. They were kind of trying to do that stuff. And it wasn't like super the best fit for the kind of stuff that I really wanted to be doing. But obviously when you have an offer to cover the NBA for a major national media outlet, you try to, you know, make it work as best you can. And that opened doors for some other gigs that I ended up in over the next several years. And that, you know, now I am where I am, I guess, is the really short version of it.
Well, so when you were young, Sean, just getting into the Blazers, were you into it because you loved playing the game? Were you fascinated by the players and everything around it? Like, what sort of drew you in?
Well, early on, when I was in like third grade, you know, you think, oh, I want to play in the NBA one day. That was not going to happen for me. I have no athletic talent whatsoever. And I never, like, I played in third grade and fourth grade. And I think through like fifth grade, I was never any good. And I think by then it's like, are you good enough to like be doing it seriously or are you not? And I very much, you know, was not. So I kind of stopped actually playing at that point, but I still like watching it. And, you know, you like, you know, you read the different, you know, I grew up reading like Jason Quick and the Oregonian, and I grew up reading like Sports Illustrated, first Sports Illustrated for kids, and then just regular Sports Illustrated. And, you know, you're reading, you know, all this other stuff and kind of learning more. I mean, this was obviously before Twitter and before video, you know, YouTube or any of the stuff like, you know that, but, you know, I would check out all the books from the library about like Michael Jordan and about like all the different, you know, the history of the NBA. And I got kind of really into it in that way, more so, I would say, than actually playing it.
Well, a lot of the stuff that I read of yours, you know, it strikes me as, you know, storytelling. Like you like seems like you like to tell the story, but that's just my impression.
Yeah, and I think there are some people who I think that's part of it. There are also, you know, there are some people who are just incredible at like breaking down film and talking about like what sets the team, you know, different teams are running. Like Danny obviously is great at that, and that's a lot of what he does. That's not really my lane, so I don't like, I know enough about that stuff to be able to know what I'm talking about when it comes up, but that's never really been how I personally approach it. But that's just because that's, you know, that's not what my personal strengths are.
Well, I think that you are a really good storyteller, and one of the things that I've been thinking about is,
appreciate you saying that.
Well, you're welcome, and I appreciate you sharing that with us, because the media landscape is not super broad. I mean, it seems like it's broad in terms of like everybody on Twitter can have an opinion about stuff,
right?
But just like with the way media has changed, and I feel like I wish there was more of a, and maybe I just as an observer am not seeing it, but I wish there was sort of more of that, like, well, you were talking about a pipeline where, like, you know, the person who's been covering something for a really long time, instead of having to like fight to keep their beat, that it's more like, oh, you're a new storyteller who has a different perspective. Let's tell more stories, because there's so many stories to be told. And when Jason Quick took time off, you know, good for him for taking time off, and I'm really glad that he's back. But he, like, his absence just as a storyteller was so noticeable. And I was like, I thought about you, and I thought about the way Jamie Hudson tells stories too. I was like, that's two people who like kind of like sort of filled that niche of like really getting to know players, where they're coming from, looking at it sort of from their perspective and all of that. But like, that's just in my mind,
right?
What totally. You're doing, I'm not sure if that's how you would characterize how you approach your work.
Well, that's interesting that you thought that, because it's only been in the last 6 months or so that I've really been covering the Blazers day to day as a beat writer. When I was at Bleacher Report for several years before that, I was more of a national writer, and I would write about the Blazers sometimes because I was around the team. But at a certain point, their priorities kind of went away from what you, I'll put it this way. Once it became clear that Dame wasn't actually going to ask for a trade, they kind of didn't have that much use for me, because the only reason that for a lot of these national media outlets, the only reason that the NBA exists is to talk about stars in small markets asking for a trade, which I'm sure you see. And you see that even now, like, I forget who it was, but there was some interview with Dame like a couple weeks ago where whoever was interviewing asked him, hey, so why are you still loyal? It's like, are we really still doing that? But like, the point, my point being, like, the direction that they were going was not really a direction that I wanted to be going in. And so I was thinking, and I didn't plan this around Jason saying that he was going to take some time off. It just happened to work out that the time that I decided to like do my own thing and see if I could make the independent subscription thing work happened to be right around the time that that announcement happened. And so I think, you know, from that standpoint, you know, I know Jason very well, and I'm very happy that he's back on the beat, and he, you know, did whatever he needed to do personally to get to the place where he could do that. But for that time, I definitely did feel like, okay, there's a void to fill here. Let me try to fill it.
During that time that he was out, there was also no shortage of stuff going on, you know, just
a lot of stuff. I'll tell you this, that was deciding to launch my thing the week of the draft was not the worst move in the world, because I launched it, I think, on like the Tuesday of that week. I think it was the 21st of June. So I launched it that day. The next day, they trade for Jeremy Grant. The day after that is the draft, where they draft somebody with the 7th overall pick who's like this intriguing prospect that nobody really knows anything about, and that's Shaedon Sharpe. And then that weekend, or like a week later, is free agency. And then Summer League, where I, you know, I went down to Vegas and, you know, they had kind of, you know, they had their Summer League championship run. I wasn't there for the whole thing, but I was there for like the first two or three or four days. That's usually as much of Vegas as I can do in the middle of July when it's like 120 degrees out. But, you know, Summer League was going on, so there was stuff to cover. And then Dame signed his extension. And so there was, it was a good time to launch an endeavor like that, because there was no shortage of stuff to write about at that point.
Yeah, for sure. Well, so I have questions about two stories that you have told that sort of stuck in my mind that I would love to, if you can share a few more just details or thoughts sure. on them. The first one occurred before I think you went independent, but I think constantly about, and that was the new coach's introductory press conference and the famous, Sean, that's proprietary. Yeah. Now, if the former GM had said my name like that, like my spirit would have exited my body. I would have just been like, oh my God. But it got me to thinking, like, what was it like in the room that day? Cause that was a wild press conference.
It was one of the more memorable days, I think, of my career in a lot of ways. And, you know, I'm happy to talk about it. I've got to be careful how I talk about it, obviously, given the, you know, what it was all about and everything like that. But the thing you have to remember is that this press conference was coming maybe a few weeks after the first press conference that he gave, where it was like the day after, so they lost that first round series to Denver, and then they fire Terry Stotts, and then he does his end of season media availability, and he says the first round exit was not a product of the roster. And I think that, I mean, first of all, something that a couple of different people told me was that if Paul Allen was alive, he would have been fired that day just for refusing to take any kind of responsibility for things being the way they are. So there was already kind of this feeling of, you know, this guy just thinks he's bulletproof and he's just going to do whatever he wants and nobody can really do anything about it. And, you know, because, you know, the owner that was actually involved is no longer alive, nobody's really going to do anything and whatever. And then a few weeks go by, the coaching search, I will use air quotes for coaching search, because there was only ever one person that was under consideration for that job. I know that there were a couple of other people who were interviewed and went through the process of being finalists, but there was only one person that Neil was ever going to hire, because he and Chauncey had a relationship going back to the Clippers days. And this is, the most important thing to Neil Olshey is whether he knows somebody or not, in terms of whether to hire them or sign them or trade for them or whatever. So we all knew for weeks that, and not even weeks, months, I had someone tell me back in February of that year that Chauncey was going to be who the head coach was. Like, that's how much it was like known that that was Neil's guy. And if the allegations from 1997 hadn't resurfaced, like, I'll be honest with you, like, I had no idea that those existed until his name started coming up in these head coaching searches and in these interview processes, and somebody put it on social media, like an excerpt from some book or whatever. Like, when Dame came out and said he wanted Jason Kidd, which Neil was never going to hire Jason Kidd, because Neil would never hire somebody who might try to take his job from him. It was more of a self-preservation thing than anything else. But when Dame came out and said he wanted Jason Kidd, everybody immediately online was like, no, absolutely not, because his stuff is all out there. His stuff is all well-documented. The Chauncey thing, I had no clue about until
I had no idea it started getting out there.
And even still, like, it's, you know, I've read everything that there is out there about it from the time and all of that kind of stuff. But it was the kind of thing where, like, I'll say this, there was a way that they could have handled it if that was who they were going to hire. And I'm not going to sit here and say that because somebody was accused of something 25 years ago means he should never be able to get a job anywhere. But if you're going to hire somebody with that in their background, you have to be willing to sit up there and take as many questions as people have about it and answer as many of them as people have for you about it. And Neil just, whether it be for something like that or for any of his basketball decisions or anything else, he could, one of, you know, there are many reasons why he's not the GM anymore, but one of them was that he could never handle the idea of not being the smartest guy in the room or of being challenged on anything. And, you know, that press conference was handled the way it was handled. And honestly, I think it kind of put Chauncey in a bad spot too, because I mean, I know Chauncey, I would say, quite well at this point. I've covered him now for, this is my second season covering him. I'm around the team every day, talk to him all the time. I know him well enough to feel like, I think he is self, I have no idea what happened in 25 years ago or whether he did or didn't do what he was accused of. I don't really have any interest in relitigating that. And I don't think anybody really will know whether that happened the way that it was accused or not or whatever. But I know Chauncey well enough to think that he is self-aware enough that he would understand why people want to hear him talk about it. And I think in the right setting, he would talk about it and he would be willing to, because he did say in his opening statement at that press conference that whatever happened that night shaped his life in unbelievable ways, I think was the exact quote that he gave. I think if he had been given the opportunity to expand on that, because Jason asked him about that and then Ashley shut the question down and, you know, he wasn't able to answer it. But if he had been given the opportunity to do that, I think a lot of people might have felt differently about him depending on what it was that he said. And I have a lot of friends who are women who are Blazer fans who felt a certain way about the hire at the time. All of them have told me, especially now that the team is like good and fun again, a lot of them have told me, you know, we want to like Chauncey. We want to be on board with him. He seems like a really good guy. It's just, you know, we haven't gotten the closure that we need on whatever there is to make of those allegations from 25 years ago. And I think the time to do that would have been at that press conference, but then Neil just kind of had to step all over it.
Yeah, I was just thinking about, thank you for that, like, for that answer. I was, you know, just thinking about like what the dynamics in the room must have been like, and like, were you guys all just staring at each other like, what is going on
here? I mean, we all kind of knew what we were going to expect. I can't say I came in here thinking,
so that part,
I can't say I came in there thinking, oh, you know, Neil's going to handle this well and he's going to, you know, answer these questions as appropriately as he can. He's, you know, I was around the guy for long enough that like I kind of know how he reacts to this kind of stuff, that, you know, I kind of figured that was going to happen. And I didn't really, like, I will say, obviously, that whole week and, you know, even up to now, like, I've had people say to me, like, thank you for asking that question. And I'm just like, I didn't do anything. All I did was ask the obvious question there was to ask. And like, there wasn't any, you know, worry about like, oh, are people going to get mad if I ask it? Because, you know, Neil never liked me. He wasn't going to like me if I didn't ask that question. He certainly didn't like me after I asked that question. But I also don't really care if he likes me or not, because it's not my job to have him like me. But it was a weird day, I'll say that.
Mm-hmm. It always interests me the different things that we, as, because we're fans of just a sports, sure, team, an entertainment, yeah, sports team, the way that we have these like shared experiences that are so much more meaningful than we ever thought we were gonna get when we turned on the TV to watch the game for, mm-hmm, the first time.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's like it just turns into this whole
and this is something thing that I've actually said. So anyway, like, I said this to somebody who was asking me, like, you know, what's it like to cover the NBA? And this is something, even like, let's put aside the whole Chauncey Neal thing for a second and just,
yeah,
but like, even besides like that whole situation, you get into covering the NBA because you really like the NBA and you like basketball and you like talking about basketball and you like writing about basketball. But if you want to do the job well, there's so much other stuff that you have to be able to talk about and write about. If all of us were kind of navigating that during the pandemic when they were talking about coming back during the bubble. And now you suddenly, to cover the NBA, you have to know enough about epidemiology to be able to talk about like that aspect of whether they should come back or all that stuff. You have to be able to talk about that in an informed way. You have to, you know, when the George Floyd stuff was happening that same summer, and then when it got into the bubble and the players walked out after the Jacob Blake shooting, you have to be able to cover that stuff and talk about that stuff in a respectful kind of way also. You know, if, you know, with, you know, there's these CBA negotiations going on right now. I don't expect there to be any real issues with the CBA getting done or there being a lockout or anything like that. But you have to know about labor relations and like the business and like economic side of the league. You know, I'm covering, you know, I'm doing what I can as far as covering like the Blazers ownership situation right now. You have to kind of know about that side of things too. Like there's so much other, you don't just like, I mean, you can't, if you want to be the person that is like, your niche is just like, I write about the X's and O's of basketball and I break down plays. There are people who are great at that, but for what I do, like there's so much other stuff that has to go into, you know, you have to know about all this other kind of stuff. You have to be able to talk about all this other different kind of stuff. And you also have to know yourself enough to know your limitations of not, of like what you are and are not comfortable talking about publicly. Like about a month ago, during like the whole Kyrie thing, I don't know why they went to me, but I got a request from a national news TV show to come on. First of all, it was like at 8 a.m. Eastern time, so it would have been 5 a.m. Pacific time, but they wanted me to come on and talk about it. And I said no. And I think at a different point in my career, I might have said yes, because like I need the, you know, it's good exposure to be on national TV or whatever. But I was like, do I want to get up at 5 a.m. to go on national TV and speak extemporaneously about a very popular NBA player posting an anti-Semitic conspiracy video on Instagram? Like, do I really want it? Like, do I need the exposure enough to want to do that? Like, no, I'm good. I don't need it. No.
Yeah, totally. Well, I'm exhausted just thinking about all the things that you have to think about all the time. Yeah,
and even with that all being the case, it's not like I'm covering, you know, national security. It's not like I'm covering actually, I mean, a lot of this stuff actually is important. And, you know, the way that like sports intersect with, you know, politics and, you know, society and whatever else, obviously you see everything that's going on with the World Cup right now and on all of that. And there's so much other stuff that does, but it's like, I'm not covering, you know, war. I'm not covering, you know, the January 6th hearings. I'm not covering like actually important stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, but I would also say like that it is stuff that people connect totally over. And, you know, that's really important. Uh-huh. That is really important. Well, so I have one other just little story that is on a much lighter note, I think. But because I don't know the background, this summer when Kevin Durant was maybe in Portland.
That's right. Yeah.
Will you tell folks that
story? About the camp?
I read it about in the newsletter.
Camp. Yeah. So,
yes. If they haven't heard it.
So Grant High School is where I went to school. And at the time, I lived quite close to Grant, like a few blocks away. And I think that, so this was on June 30th, and I think at noon Pacific time, because it's 3 Eastern, was when free agency opened, when teams were allowed to start negotiating with players about free agent deals. And so I kind of had my computer set up at home, and I was just like making, you know, getting ready to, you know, react to anything. And, you know, I had some calls out, some texts out to different people about what the Blazers were going to be doing to try to figure out kind of what was going on. And then Stephen A. Smith said on First Take or the free agency, whatever ESPN program he was on, he said, Kevin Durant is in Portland at Mike James's basketball camp. And I was like, okay, I don't know where that camp is. And then somebody sent me a text saying, hey, you know, you do know that Mike James's camp is at Grant, right? And I was like, well, okay, that makes sense. Cause Mike James we didn't know each other at all, but we actually were in the same class, me and Mike James. But so I was like, wait, so Kevin Durant is 3 blocks from me right after this report came out that he requested a trade from Brooklyn, which I don't remember if it was the same day or before that, that Dame posted the graphic of him and KD wearing Blazers jerseys together. I don't.
Yeah, they're
I don't remember the timeline. Yeah. I don't remember whether Dane posted that before the trade request came down or after the trade request came down. But one of the biggest stars in the NBA just requested a trade, and he's in Portland at a basketball camp like three blocks from me. I'm just going to go for a walk and just kind of stretch my legs before the free agency madness really starts. Let's see where I end up. Let's see who I run into. And so I walk over there and just kind of hang out, and I see Mike James coming in and out. I see some people who clearly look like they're coaches or counselors at a basketball game. I don't see any sign of Kevin Durant. Finally, some guy who I think was like doing security or something for the camp comes up to me. He must have like recognized me and like knew who I was or like what I did or whatever. And was like, hey, are you looking to talk to somebody at the camp? And I was like, well, is Kevin Durant here? I don't even know what I was going to do. Like what? I don't know Kevin Durant at all. Like I've interviewed him a couple of times over the years, but like, I don't think he would know my name if like he saw me. Like, I don't know the guy at all. It's not like we have like a relationship where I could have done that. So I was like, what? Kevin Durant is going to give me the exclusive after, you know, he sets the entire NBA on fire 30 minutes before free agency starts or whatever. But the person told me that KD actually wasn't even in Portland and that he was supposed to show up for the camp, but something came up at work. And I guess the something that came up was him deciding he wanted to ask for a trade.
I wonder if that was like the dinner, the something that came up was the dinner where he went and said that it was like either get rid of the coach.
Well, no, because that part came a couple weeks later, I think, with the ultimatum of like trade me or fire the coach and the GM.
Oh man, just absolute craziness. Yeah, I was very curious of like if you had any idea like what you would ask him. Have you ever done any other crazy things like that where you were trying to track down somebody? I mean, remember when were you in Portland during the whole Festus Ezeli flight?
No. I was in Chicago. The craziest one I think in Chicago was the stakeout during the 2014. I mean, I do have one Blazer related one that I'll tell you about off air. I don't know if that's something I feel comfortable because I never got out. So I don't know if it's like something I feel comfortable like saying on the record or anything. We can talk about it after we're done recording. But when.
Yeah, don't say anything.
But when I was when I was still in Chicago, the summer of 2014, which was the same summer that LeBron left Miami to go back to Cleveland. The second biggest free agent that year was Carmelo Anthony. And the Bulls were like the team that was like rumored, like if he was either going to stay in New York or go to Chicago. And the Bulls flew him in for a visit. And they had like the side of the United Center. They had the video board like with Carmelo in a number 7 Bulls jersey. Like they rolled out the red carpet for him, basically. And me and like the other Bulls beat writers at the time just kind of staked out the United Center the whole day because we knew that he was in there meeting with the front office and with Tom Thibodeau and with whatever players were in there and all of that kind of stuff. And we all just kind of staked it out. And then finally, like, he comes out and, like, you know, we were all trying to, like, get him to talk and he won't talk. He gets in the car, just kind of goes away. And then 2 weeks later, remember, this was a free agency where nothing happened in the entire league for like 10 days because everybody was just waiting to see what LeBron was going to do. And then when LeBron finally decided he was going to go back to Cleveland, then every other free agent deal happened within the next like 2 hours. And Melo eventually decided to go back to New York and sign there. So it was all for nothing.
I bet there's a lot of stories like that. I mean, reporters spend a lot of time doing that. Well, so you were in Chicago for
a few years
at least, if not 4 years. Okay. So this is like a really naive question, but I only know Portland. I don't know any other fan bases. So what are some of the ways that it was different covering the Bulls than it is covering Portland?
Well,
now?
Chicago's a different sports city for a number of reasons. I think the biggest one is that Chicago has teams in all the major sports. An NFL team. They have two baseball teams. They have an NHL team. Like they have all the, whereas with the Blazers, like, you know, all respect to, you know, the Timbers and the Thorns are like getting, you know, more popular and, you know, some of the college stuff is popular, but the Blazers are for all intents and purposes, pretty much the only game in town. So it's a totally different dynamic than Like in Chicago, like everybody cares about the Bears. It's like the Bears above all, because in any NFL city, football is king. And then it probably goes Cubs second. And then probably the Bulls third. And a lot of that is kind of left over, like the like they have such a following and such a fan base because of the Jordan years in the 90s. And they, you know, it kind of comes and goes after that. And I'll say this, I think a lot of Bulls fans are a lot more nihilistic about the team than a lot of Blazer fans. Like, there's not going to be a whole lot of, like, going into every season thinking the Bulls are going to win the championship the way that, like, that TBAGT, whatever that acronym is. Like, there's nothing like that in Chicago, because everybody was just, it's just been so beaten down for years by, like, the post-Jordan years, and, like, a lot of those teams weren't very good, and then they thought they had, like, their next contender with those Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah teams, and then Derrick Rose tears his ACL, and that, like, you know, tears everything, you know, that just, you know, sinks that whole thing, which is a lot of the era that I was there. I wasn't there when he tore the ACL, but I was there for like the years in the aftermath of that. And then there was like the tear down and like the Jim Boylan stuff. And now they were pretty good last year again, and now they're kind of bad again. Like, all Bulls fans that I know kind of like their attitude is like, you can't trash talk the Bulls to us and we'll get offended, because everything you say about the Bulls, we say much worse stuff about our own team. That's kind of the mindset of that fan base, at least in the time that I was around them. I think it was different this was a little bit before I got there, but I think it was different in that 2010, 2011, the first Tibbs year, the year that Rose won MVP, when they had the best record in the league, and everybody thought that it was going to be them in Miami in the East for the next 10 years. Like, I think there was a little bit more optimism then, but since then, it's just been a lot. It's a lot more cynicism, I think, than a lot of corners of Blazers Twitter. And then not to say there isn't a lot of that in Portland, because there certainly is. And I can't tell you how many times in the last few weeks that, like, you know, they lose one of these games without Dame, and I get a ton of like, oh, blow it up, you know, trade Dame, do all, you know, this team sucks, fire everyone. Like, there still is a lot of that stuff, but it's pretty much exclusively that in Chicago when it comes to the Bulls.
Yeah, it feels like with in a place like Chicago, people can spread their anxiety right across a broader range.
And it's not
range.
Like the Bears give them anything to be happy about either. That franchise is not well run. Like, other than, like, I guess the Blackhawks had their little run in the 2000s, in like the 2010s, where they won a couple of Stanley Cups. I'm not a big hockey guy, but I was there when, you know, they had that little run. I was actually in Chicago when the Cubs won the World Series, so that was a pretty big deal that people Ooh. Were excited about. And now, you know, I think you can now, you know, the WNBA is getting so much more popular. I think you can include that, you know, now as part of the sports scene. But a lot of people I know in Chicago were really excited when the Sky won the title last year or a year or 2 years ago or whenever that was. But so there has been some success, but for the most part, it's been a lot of like the White Sox are not really any good. And, you know, the Bears are not well run, and the Bulls are, you know, the Bulls. So
I thought it was a travesty to have a team that wasn't either at the bottom or the top, but I guess other fan bases survive. With
that's honestly something that my thinking has evolved about, as far as the, you know, you want to either be contending or you want to be tanking for draft picks. That's something that, as I've been around the league a lot more. And also the other thing, I think, I don't know if you and I have even like talked about this part of doing this professionally, but even though I did grow up a huge Blazer fan and going to games and all that stuff, when you do this professionally long enough, you're being a fan of a team and actually like being emotionally invested in whether a team wins or loses just completely falls away, because you know the people and you see the stuff behind the curtain and you don't really have that same like fan like energy about it. That's I'm not saying that's better or worse, but it's just a different thing. It's a different lens that I look through it now. But I go, like, during the summer, like particularly after the Jazz traded Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell for like a million picks and decided that they were going to like restart everything and completely tear it down. And then the Spurs did the same thing with trading DeJounte Murray and decided that they were going to completely rebuild. I got a lot of emails and tweets from Blazer fans saying, would it be better in the long term for the Blazers to trade Dame and get a bunch of draft picks and just completely start over? And I understand that, like, on paper and in a vacuum. But the thing that I told people at the time was that, you know, did you guys enjoy this past second half of the season after they shut Dame down and traded everyone and they were playing non-NBA players and getting blown out by 30 every night? Did you actually enjoy that? And would you want to sign up for multiple years in a row of that on purpose just to maybe one day get a player as good as Dame? Like, that's the part of it that I think I understand why it is that a lot of fans kind of think that on paper, that's the thing to do. But it's like, that seems like a great idea on paper, but you could also end up being the Orlando Magic and doing that for however many years after they lost Dwight Howard and never ending up getting the guy. And you're just like in purgatory for even longer. Like, I feel like as a fan of a team, you would rather have a guy like Dame and be competitive every year than, yeah, we're going to be terrible for the next 3 years, but one day we might get a lottery pick that's going to be our next guy that then if we don't win a title in 8 years with him, we're going to start talking about, hey, should we trade him and get more draft picks? The thing that I've learned, and this is maybe one of the reasons I'm a little bit more cynical about this stuff and less of like a fan that like looks at like things with, you know, glass half full and all that. One thing that I've kind of learned doing this is that most general managers' number one priority is not winning a championship. It's keeping their own job. And that's why these GMs are so eager to trade their best player for a bunch of draft picks and completely start over, because to them, they can go to ownership and say, you can't fire me because I'm in the first year of this 5-year rebuilding plan. And so that buys them 5 more years of job security. So
that is so cynical.
It's true. It's true, though. It's 100% true. Yeah, I'll tell you this.
Depressing.
I'll tell you this. If the previous GM was still here, Dame would not still be here.
Yeah. No, I totally get that, but it's just it still hurts a little bit to hear. But I mean, what I usually think about is the fact that I would rather be a team that struggles to get over the hump, doesn't end up winning a championship, but has Damian Lillard, rather than a team that struggles, doesn't get to win a championship, and doesn't have.
Or how about here's the other.
That's kind of how.
Here's the other part of it. Let's say you just do this whole like assemble, you know, super, you know, you get lucky, you know, you completely sell out like everything that you have in order to get like a second guy for Dame, or like, you know, like a Kevin Durant, or you know, whatever the case may be, like whoever the next like guy at that level is.
Kawhi,
whoever, yeah,
is the classic.
Whoever, yeah,
yeah.
How is that working out for Brooklyn? They traded a million picks for James Harden for like the big three. How's that working out? How are the Clippers working? I mean, I know with them, it's like the injury stuff with Kawhi and all that, but like they gave up like every single one of their draft picks for the next 10 years to get Paul George to pair with Kawhi. How's that working out? They've made the same number of conference finals as the Blazers. The Sixers, who were like the kings of the process and tanking on purpose, and
how's that
they
going?
they did end up getting Joel Embiid out of all of that, but how many conference finals have they made? Zero. So it's like, who's to say that approach even works? So it's like, you have Dame, and you know, now that you know the front office changes that have happened like they have. I think the place that they're in right now is one where the star player, the GM, and the coach are all completely on the same page about what they want to do and how they want to do it. And the players that have been brought in are the exact types of players that you need to put around Dame. And I think they like, there's a vision now. And the other part of it is, who's to say that they aren't going to be able to come out of the West? Because if you look at the East right now, it's very clearly Milwaukee and Boston, and then a huge gap and then everybody else. Like, there's clearly two teams that are better than everybody else. There is not that in the West right now. Like, who's the best team in the West right now? It looked like it was Phoenix for a while. Right now it's New Orleans, but like, I feel like there's 10 or 11 teams, and Portland is among them, but there's 10 or 11 teams that can talk themselves into, well, if we just have everybody healthy and we have the right matchups in the playoffs, like we could come out of the West, we could make the finals. And I think the Blazers feel like that's, you know, this could be a situation where maybe it's like the 2011 Mavs, where like they had all these teams around Dirk for however many years and they just couldn't get through it. And then 2011, going into that playoffs, nobody thought they were the best team in the West, but they got the right matchups and they got some breaks with injuries and they ended up winning the title. I certainly think Dame feels this way. I think Joe is a little bit more realistic about the roster needing some work, but I think a lot of people around the organization feel like, you know, why can't that be us?
Right. Well, so much of it has to do with just everything else that's out of our control. The Blazers' control.
I mean, as soon as with
right. And are you ready when you are presented with? Are they going to be ready when the opportunity
right? And I think
that's itself. And I think
that's something that they're working towards right now. Like you're starting to see. You know, you're looking at like how well Jeremy Grant has fit in so far. That's been like exactly as advertised. Simons, like he had a kind of a rough start to the season, but he's been pretty lights out for the last month or so. We don't still know quite what's going on with Gary Payton, but that's going to, you know, theoretically he's going to play at some point. And the other part of it also is that, and this is also a change of pace. I don't want to keep, you know, piling on the last GM because that's kind of a dead horse at this point, but he would maybe sign like Tony Snell and Cody Zeller to minimum deals. And that was his entire offseason. And then he would come into media day and say, this is the deepest team we've ever had around
Best
Dame.
Team.
Yeah, exactly. Like that was always what he was trying to sell. I think the thing that if I were a fan, I would find really refreshing about the new front office is, first of all, this clearly is the best team that they've had talent-wise since the LaMarcus Batum, Robin Lopez teams, like at the beginning of Dame's career. But also the GM came out on media day and has, I mean, he didn't just say this on media day. He said this, you know, a million times. He said this in different interviews. It's something he said to me when he and I have just talked, like all this stuff. He comes out and says, this is still not good enough. We're not where we need to be. And we don't have the exact team that we need to have. And I think just having that awareness of where you are and not just feeling like, well, we traded for Jeremy Grant. We're a title contender now. And knowing that like there's another move that or two that has to be made. Like just having that awareness and having that, you know, long-term vision, I think I don't want to say is going to pay off because I have no idea if they're going to end up winning a title or not, but it has a better chance of paying off than the way that the previous regime, I guess, approached things.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. As somebody who's done deep dives on Cody Zeller and Larry Nance Jr. to talk myself into how they were going to take the Blazers over the top, I can very much relate to all of that. Just like, okay, I'm going to be Cody Zeller's number one fan this season. So,
not that there's
anything
wrong with that. He actually was pretty good at the beginning of last season before he got hurt. But like, if that's your big offseason acquisition, like you're probably not in a meaningfully different place than you were before.
And insert Anthony.
Well,
Tolliver,
it's just, you know, he would just kind
Mario
of.
Hosonia.
Well, I think the different the thing that was like the fatal flaw of the previous GM was there was one obvious move to make that would have made the team better. And it was the one thing he would never, ever, ever do. And in order to get out of doing that, he would just.
He did everything.
He would just kind
else
of swap out
do.
A Robert Covington for like an Al-Farouq Aminu, mm-hmm. for a Larry Nance, for like a Evan Turner, just like kind of swap, you know, just like, oh, it's not the Dame CJ thing. It's just every piece around him. And so then he just kept giving away more future. And I'm actually in the middle of writing something that's going to go up on the 15th, which is kind of the unofficial start of trade season, just going through like what all the Blazers have to work with from a trade standpoint between now and the deadline. They still owe their first round pick to the Bulls this coming year if it's outside the lottery. And if it doesn't convey, then it conveys through 2028. And that was from the Larry Nance trade. So a lot, and that comes on the heels of a year before trading two first rounders for Robert Covington. So it's just a whole lot of like that type of thing just to make sure that nobody was thinking, hey, we should break up Dame and CJ. Because that would have never happened. And I firmly believe that if the general manager change from last December never happened, they would have still been bad last year. Dame would have had the surgery and gotten shut down. And then Neil would have come out and say, no, it wasn't the roster. It was just that Dame was hurt. And then he would have run it back with Dame and CJ again. And then I think Dame probably would have been asking for a trade.
Right. And I would have feared that they would have rushed him back as well.
Maybe. You know, I don't know. I mean, I will say that, like, if that.
That's his fan. Well, but fear also,
going back to like my own, you know, what I was saying about job security, Dame misses the season. That's a built-in excuse for the front office to say, hey, this is why we weren't good. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't look at me. You shouldn't look at my job.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't.
No, not at all.
Okay, I have one last question. And so I try to be responsible in because of all of these years of being told that Anthony Tolliver was going to get us over the edge. I loved Anthony Tolliver.
Really good guy.
Socks Tolliver.
Yeah.
Give me Tall Socks Tolliver. I loved him. Scalavicier. Loved him. Moses Brown. Loved him. Loved all these guys. But I'm so used to being told one thing and then looking at the court and going, that doesn't match.
Yeah.
What I'm seeing doesn't match. So what that you have seen this year, could you tell me to encourage me to make me believe that this is real, that this team is actually building towards something and it's not the, you know, smoke and mirrors that I've become so accustomed to in the past?
The biggest difference to me between this team and the last several years is that there's never been, even the games that they've lost, there has not been a game this season where I've looked at it and said, well, the effort isn't there. They're just mailing this one in. I mean, have there been some breakdowns?
Even when they blew an 18-point lead?
I mean, I guess that was probably the worst one of the season. But my point being, there were some of these other games, like I wrote this on opening night when they got down 14 to Sacramento. Last year's team would have just completely let go of the rope and that would have been a 25-point loss by the end of the night. But, and I think part of this is because the new front office has kind of self-selected for the types of guys that are going to be competitors and are going to take that kind of stuff personally. And, you know, the Josh Harts and Jeremy Grants and Justice Winslows and that type of guy. Like, the thing that they've said they've wanted this whole time is they just want guys that are going to compete every night. And I don't know what their record is going to be at the end of the year, but I think, you know, this is something I've heard from a lot of fans that I talk to, but they enjoy watching this team night in and night out more so than they've enjoyed watching the last few years of teams that maybe you can argue were more talented, but that didn't have the same identity and the roster wasn't built the same way and didn't have kind of that same consistency of like guys that have the same kind of mindset. And I think that ultimately that you look at all of these other teams that have all these question marks about that kind of stuff, like the Timberwolves, who they played last night and are going to play again tomorrow. There's been all these questions about like the Gobert Towns fit and like who, you know, whether like Towns likes, you know, the way Anthony Edwards carries himself or whatever. And then, you know, the Warriors are having all the, like, I think that with the amount that they've invested with this Blazers offseason in creating an identity and finding and self-selecting for guys that fit into that identity, I think that's going to pay off more down the road than some of these other ones where these other teams are more talented, but they have so many of these other questions that are maybe going to come into play around that. If they're just solid and consistent, I think that's, at the end of the day, that might, especially with the West being as kind of level as it is right now, where there's not like Golden State isn't running away with it. Phoenix isn't running away with it right now. Like they're, you know, that's an advantage that I think that the Blazers could potentially have. And we'll see who stays healthy. We'll see what they do with the deadline, who comes in, who goes out, any of that kind of stuff. But that's, to me, that would be the thing that I would be the most encouraged by right now as a fan.
Well, I love to hear it. I totally agree. I love watching the team this year. And I did actually enjoy the second half of last season because I gave up any expectations. Well,
but you liked that for half of a season. You didn't watch that and say, I want to do this on purpose for four more
because
years.
I knew it was going to be over.
It was the equivalent of like when Steph broke his hand And the Warriors were like, you know what? Don't even worry about coming. It was the same year that like Clay had torn his ACL. They were like, don't even worry about it. Let's just do this for 1 year. And it's a lot easier to like get excited about that and be like, oh yeah, Keldon Blevins and CJ Ellaby in the starting lineup. Like, it's a lot easier to get excited about that when you know that you're doing it for 3 months as opposed to, we're going to have to sit through four more years of this. And then maybe one day, one of the players that we draft will end up being as good as Dame.
Yeah, no, for sure. The fact that it was going to end was critical to my enjoyment of that. But yeah, no, I personally think another thing that makes it fun to watch is that we actually get to watch guys who usually it's like we're so biting our nails about, oh, so-and-so's got this huge contract and it's so big and are they playing up to it? Blah, blah, blah. We have Drew Eubanks out there crushing
on a minimum,
everybody, you know, crushing with his minimum, and that just makes me so happy. And that kind of like, that's kind of how it was when Melo was there on a minimum. It's like he's on a minimum. Like anybody who's like performing and contributing every single night on a minimum, that just makes my heart happy. And to be able to see Drew Eubanks do it in front of his parents 41 nights this season, I mean,
dunking alone on Rudy Gobert last night.
Oh,
I know you're like the dunk aficionado. Where does that one rank this season for you?
That was really high. That was really high because it was over Rudy Gobert, because it was in front of his parents, in front of the hometown, and because it was critical to getting them over the hump and winning that game. The one at the end of the third, like got them started. And then that one was just like, yes, we needed that. Good job, Drew Eubanks. Well, Sean, I have kept you for quite a while, and I so appreciate your time and in telling me all of these stories and your thoughts about the Blazers. Will you? Can you tell people where they can find your work now and any new exciting developments that are going on with the Rose Garden?
Certainly. I mean, I actually do have one of those to share. Like, just in the last couple of days, I signed a deal with Odyssey, which is the parent company of 1080 The Fan, as well as, you know, a bunch of other radio stations all across the country, where they're going to take a lot of the production and distribution responsibilities off my plate for the podcast. It's still going to be the same podcast, but they're going to help me out with that stuff and also sell ads, which hopefully will mean more money for me down the line with it. So there's that going on. And then as far as the writing and the newsletter side of it, you can just go to rosegardenreport.com. and sign up. You can either sign up for free, where you'll get some of the content, or you can sign up for the paid tier, which you'll get all of the content. I think going forward, probably around the first of the year, I'm just going to give people a heads up about this right now. Right now, I'd say I've been giving a lot of it away for free. I think that's probably going to change in the new year, just because part of why I haven't been paywalling a lot of stuff is because they've been on the road so much and I'm not on the road with the team. But, and so I don't love the idea of asking people to pay for something that I just wrote off of watching a game on TV from home. But they're going to be home a lot more starting in the new year. And that's going to lead to a lot more ability for me to actually do some more real like reporting and talking to different people and getting a lot more, you know, more exclusive stuff. And a lot of that kind of stuff is going to start going more behind the paywall. I keep the price, I think, pretty reasonable for the amount of stuff I'm giving people. It's $6 a month, or you can pay $50 upfront for the whole year. I think that's for the, again, the amount of content that you're getting. And for, in my opinion, the, like, I put a lot of work into it. In my opinion, I think I'm giving people a quality product for that amount of money. So I think, you know, in that sense, I think it's worth considering signing up for if you want to read stuff from somebody who is around the team every day and knows what's going on and, you know, can kind of fill people in that way.
As a paid subscriber, a very
you were day one. I'm pretty sure you signed up the day. Yeah, I really appreciate that.
I was like, yes, I was super excited because I like it. I said I was ready for some new voices to come in and fill that space for people reporting. And then your podcast is also available.
Podcast is just
podcasts,
on,
right? You don't have
to have Apple, Spotify, or Apple, Odyssey. Spotify, whatever. It's going to be YouTube soon. They, part of this Odyssey deal is they want me to start doing a video element of it too. So we're going to kind of start building that up pretty soon. The podcast, I think, is a little bit like, I don't like, I kind of try to do it a little bit differently than what some of the other ones are. I don't really do game preview and game recap stuff because Richmond does a great job of that on Locked On. Danny does a great job of that stuff on Jack Ramsey's. I try to do more like, for example, the most recent episode that I had was with Adam Mares, who covers the Nuggets. And it was like a couple days before the Blazers played the Nuggets. But I don't think we spent any time at all talking about previewing that game. It was more, from my standpoint, it was more of just, this is a team the Blazers are about to play, and they're one of their more interesting division rivals and one of the best teams in the Western Conference. I kind of want to just give my audience a bigger picture look at where this team is right now. I'm going to do a similar one with the Timberwolves tomorrow. Like, that's kind of more the type of stuff that I try to do, stuff that has a little bit more of a shelf life than just like, oh, we're going to react to this game that just happened and nobody's going to care about it in 2 days. So that's kind of what I try to do with that. And I, you know, now that I have this deal with Odyssey, I think that's going to just get built up even more. So I'm pretty excited about it.
Well, it's smart thinking and it's good content. And that's one of the things that I think is fun about podcasts, is that there's just so many different ways you can do them and there's something for everybody. Uh-huh. So I thank you for coming online. Thank you so much for your time. For folks who are still listening, I know I went on a little bit long this time, but you know me, I just can't stop. You can find me at TCB Biggs on Twitter. You can find the podcast at We Have a Take and wherever else you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening, and go Blazers.